In our study on David's legacy, we've finally reached a very well-known story. This is not one of those sermons where you're like, oh, I had no idea that this happened to David in his life. This, of all the stories about David, is probably the story that you know the best. It's probably the one that you actually associate with David, even if you never grew up going to church. This is the story about David that you know. It's that David goes to fight the giant named Goliath. You see, if you did this reading, or even if you're just looking at it right now, that this story is a very long story compared to some other things in David's life. Some of the stories about David's life are like 5 verses long. This whole chapter of 58 verses is all about David fighting Goliath, which tells us that it's probably very important, which means you would know about it if you know anything about David. However, oftentimes we look at this story and we just see it as a story, even if we see it as historical fact, it's a good story. It's a very good story. But other times when we come to this story, we come to the story of David and Goliath, and then there's this huge confusion about, okay, how does this apply to me today? Because last thing I checked, God's not calling the church to kill giants, right? To just go around and take out God's enemies in that fashion, because it's different now. He was calling Israel to do that in this time period. So a lot of times, pastors, Sunday school teachers, we come to this passage and there's this huge confusion about how do I draw a correlation between David and me and Goliath and what's going on in my life. And so you probably hear a lot of different things being talked about as like how to overcome your giants, or how to, you know, have the faith to let God help you overcome your giants. And this whole like concept of what is a giant just kind of, it's like whatever you want it to be, right? It's like, well, you know, if what's going on in your life right now, you have a giant and it's debt, student loan debt, car debt, whatever. You have debt and that's your giant, and God is calling you and enabling you to conquer that giant and overcome. And if you have faith, you can overcome it. Sometimes it's like a challenging person in your workplace, or, you know, a situation where you're being mistreated, and that's the giant that needs to be slain in your life. I think there's obviously, with a passage that it's this long, there are tons of lessons to be learned from this story, from this narrative about David, and plenty of things that are being taught from this passage are applicable things that come from the Bible, that God will help you overcome challenges. That's true. But I don't think that that's the biggest thing going on in this passage, and I don't know that minimizing giants to debt or to the hardship you're facing right now is doing the Bible justice. And so today, I hope you'll go with me and follow along as closely as we can while we try and pull lessons from this story. So at the beginning of 1 Samuel chapter 17, I hope you did your reading. If not, it's okay. You can read while I am talking, because I will not read this whole chapter. But at the beginning of 1 Samuel 17, the armies of the Philistines, Israel's biggest enemy at this time, who were fighting over the same land that God had told Israel, I'm giving you. The Philistines are always at war with the Israelites. And so Saul sends all of his troops and he goes with them to go fight the Philistines. And they are camped now on the border, sort of, in between their lands, where there's two big hills or mountains, depending on if you grew up near a mountain or if you grew up in the plains, you can distinguish if it's a hill or a mountain. That's up to you. But they're on these two high places, and then there's this valley. And they're kind of at a standoff. because nobody's going down in the valley, because that's just suicide, because you get arrows shot at you, stones thrown at you. There's no way to win from the valley. And so they're kind of just yelling at each other. We all think about ancient warfare, and we think about like all this blood and guts and all this fighting and different tactics and things. The Philistines and the Israelites weren't doing that at this point. They kind of went on like a camping trip is all that happened, and then they're yelling at each other. They're really mad at each other, and they want to kill each other, but they know they can't do anything about where they're at, and so they're just yelling at each other. But what happens in this time, instead of all the other times the Philistines and Israelites have fought, there's a secret weapon that the Philistines show. And this is one guy. He comes down to the valley. And as he's getting closer, everyone notices this is not a normal guy. There's something different about him. You see him described in here and describe what he's wearing as far as his armor and his weapons. Based on the description, if you do some conversions and, you know, exact measurements are, you know, hard to come by, but Goliath is described as someone who's about 9'9". So, Michael, how tall are you? Yeah, so 6'2". So, like, a half of a Michael on top of Michael, okay? The guy is 9'9", okay? And he is not a skinny 9'9". He has armor that weighs 120 pounds, which is a little bit, I can't think of how to say it, a little bit more than half of me. So a Michael and a half carrying half of a Caleb in armor. Just as, you know, protective clothing. Like it's not that he could pick half of me up. That's not that impressive. I can pick up 120 pounds. But he's wearing it like it's no big deal. And then he has a couple different things. He's got a shield that weighs a ton and is huge compared to the shields most people would use in that time frame. Most of the shields people used at that time were like this big, made out of wood, covered in some form of leather. And, you know, anyone could carry it. It was supposed to be able to be moved. Well, Goliath has this ginormous shield that he can move. Apart from the shield and the armor, which both weigh a lot, he has a spear, and the shaft of the spear, the thing that you grab onto to throw, was the size of a weaver's beam. I don't weave a lot, but it's big, okay? So, like, it's like this big. And Goliath, you know, just carries it around. He's got a shield, big spear, 120 pounds of armor. Standing at 9'9". So he was strong and muscular and everything. Now, if we had a kid like that today, we would not turn him into a warrior. We would turn him into a professional sports player, right? You got a 9'9" person who can carry and lift weights and do whatever they want. We're going to make them play basketball, right? Because it's no contest. You block every shot, and you can score if you just can get down to the basket and catch a ball. Like, there's no winning against that guy. But the Philistines were not interested in sports, right, as much as America is. And so they, from the time that this man, Goliath, was young, about David's age, probably, from that point on in his life, all he did was go to war. So he's an experienced, heavy-duty, armored, heavy-weaponized human being who's, you know, this is not his first day. So he goes down to the valley, and he starts yelling at the Israelites. All right, we all know that this is just a terrible idea for us to come down to the valley and fight. So according to the tradition, you send one guy to come fight me. Whoever wins, wins the battle. And everybody else on the other side is now at the hands of the other side. And he says taunting things to the Israelites and about their God. We have to remember in the Old Testament and more ancient times and even a little bit into the New Testament, that nations were defined by their gods. The nations were not defined by where you were born as much as who you worshipped. Now, where you were born had a lot to play with who you worshipped, but nations went to war to prove that their God was stronger than the other nation's God. And so Goliath goes down and says, Israelites' God, it's got nothing. I can take him. You send one person, and we'll fight and we'll settle this without everyone dying. So it says that in this text that Goliath did this a couple times a day for 40 days. Like I said, these two armies were on a camping trip, just sitting there, doing nothing for 40 days, and Goliath a couple times a day would come down with all of his armor and say, is it today? Are you going to send someone to fight me so I can go home? And nobody would do anything because of what he looked like and who he was. All of Israel, the men of Israel, were afraid. They were afraid to fight the Philistines as it was. But now they're afraid because there's a challenge and only one guy has to go down. So, Jesse, David's father, a lot of his sons had already signed up to fight. They're already in the army. Some of them got kind of drafted. And a lot of his sons are gone. And they've been gone for a while. And so Jesse's getting a little bit nervous as to what's going on. And if they've been gone for 40 days, they probably need some more food. We should send them some food. So he calls David in from the field. Remember the David who was nobody that nobody cared about, who's been anointed king, and who's now on like a part-time job in the palace, that David who's now watching sheep again. He gets called in from the field. Jesse says, take some food and go to the front lines. They're over at this place is what I've been told. Take your brother some food and see how they're doing. And so David arranges for someone to watch the sheep, and then he takes the food to the battlefield. He leaves the field with an officer and then goes down to the front lines to see if he can find his brothers, see what's happening. So David probably arrives and realizes no one's fighting. This is kind of a terrible battlefield, right? So he goes around and he starts asking questions. He finds his brother, and while he's there, Goliath comes out as one of his times and taunts Israel and says, what is your God going to do? Are you going to come fight me? And David says, Goliath, what are you doing? Get down there. And his oldest brother turns to David and, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. Who'd you leave the sheep with? You want to come see people die, don't you? You can see in Eliab his shame and his fear and his anger about the situation by the way he responds to David. And David turns to him and says, well, all I did was ask a question. So seriously, you got all sorts of people here. Nobody's going to fight this guy? And so he's like, okay, so Eliab's having a bad day. He starts going around and asking other people. And they all say the same thing. David, what are you doing here? This is not a place for you. And along the way, as in the reading, we see that there is a high reward for someone who will go fight the Philistine and win. He gets to marry King Saul's daughter, becoming part of the royal family. He and his house, so the current house he lives in and his future house and descendants, will live tax-free. That's pretty good. And he's going to get rich. Like, we're going to give you a whole lot of money and we'll never tax you again if you just go fight Goliath and win. And so as David's talking to all of these soldiers and they're all saying, I'm not doing it. There's no way I'm going down there to fight that thing. I'm not going down there. And he keeps saying, no one wants to fight the guy who's mocking our God. What are you doing here? The armies of the living God are here, and this pagan is taunting our God. Nobody wants to fight him? And so word gets back to Saul. It says, Saul, your harp player here, And he's kind of like telling all of your soldiers that they're big scaredy cats. Saying, come on, anybody can fight this guy. And so Saul calls David in to, you know, he's got a big enough problem on his hands as it is. And he's trying to convince an entire army to stay camped there and trying to bribe someone into going and fighting. And David's causing all sorts of problems. So he calls David in. And Saul says, what are you doing here? Why are you causing problems? And David says to Saul, hey, nobody else needs to be afraid. No one needs to hide anymore, because if nobody else is willing to fight Goliath, I'll do it. Now, this is a terrible like conversation to be having with the king of Israel if you didn't already have a relationship with him. Because what should have happened in this situation? No one in the army wants to go fight this pagan taunting their god. Who should have gone? The king should have. Nobody else is willing to fight. The king's supposed to fight. He should lead or come up with a better plan. And all Saul's doing is sitting in a tent saying, the only thing I can do is just keep adding things onto the list because I'm not going to go fight him. And so he calls David in, and David says, all right, if everyone's too scared, I'll do it. Remember, he just left sheep like a day or two ago, just watching sheep, and comes to the line to deliver food and says, I'll fight the giant. That's fine. If you don't have anyone else lined up, put me on the schedule. I'll do it. And Saul looks at David because, remember, Saul has a good relationship with David at this point in the story. He cares about David. He likes how he plays music. He likes that he's part of his inner circle. He says, David, you're a youth. And that guy, he's been killing people since he was your age. Because he's huge. You can't go down and fight him. And look at what David says in verse 34 and going on. David says to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. Not really past tense, he still does, but he's saying, when I was watching sheep, whenever there came a lion or a bear and they took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he rose up against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will also deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So, Saul says, you're just a boy who watches sheep, David, who can play a harp. I don't need you to go get killed. And David says, you might not know this about being a shepherd, but we live out in the wild, and we watch a bunch of sheep, and our job is to keep the sheep safe. And there's a lot of wild animals out there, like lions and bears. And while I used to watch sheep, lions and bears regularly would come and threaten my flock. They come and try and take a sheep from me. When that would happen, I would go after lions, I would go after bears, and take the sheep from them. And if they gave me a problem, I grabbed them and I killed them. All because God has kept me safe. So this pagan giant is not any different than a lion and a bear. I'll run after him. I'll kill him. Because God is being mocked. And that is one thing that I know is not okay with him. He says, so God's going to deliver me from this Philistine just as he has with wild animals. And Saul says to David, okay, go, and may the Lord be with you. Like, yeah, you're going to need something. And then when he decides to let David go, Saul gives him his armor. there's a lot of things that could be going on there. I think Saul was trying to keep David safe, because he cared that David not die the second he gets down to the bottom of the hill. There's something else that could be going on. The scripture doesn't tell us, but if Saul is giving David Saul's armor, and he's got a helmet on, and he's got a chest plate, and he's got all this other thing, when the whole army of Israel sees that guy calling down the hill, who do they think he is? He thinks he's Saul, right? He's wearing the king's armor, and it's got to be Saul. So he puts it on David, and David's like, I can't even walk in this. There isn't, you're a different size than I am. I can't fight in this. I've never been trained to fight with a sword and with this armor and this helmet on my head. I can't do this. So he said, I can't take this. And look at verse 40. So he took his staff, a stick, in his hand, and he chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his pouch. And his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. David says, Saul, I can't go to war in your armor. I'm going to take this stick and a couple stones. At this point, no one was able to stop David. David's mind was made up. He knew what needed to be done, and he was going to do it. We'll read a couple verses going forward, verses 41. The Philistine moved forward, came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. So he has like a hired guy to carry a shield around because he's tired of carrying a shield around. So he comes forward, comes near to David. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. He looked at him and said, really? This is it, guys. You sent me a kid who's never fought before. He has no scars. He looks fine. That's going to be your champion. And so he says to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? He's like, what do you think I am? Just a wild dog that you're going to send a little kid to go chase me? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods, by the Philistines' gods. The Philistine said to David, if you come to me, I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. He says, go ahead, David. You want to fight? Just know that your body is going to be laying there and every animal around is going to be eating you. And that's one of the lowest forms to desecrate someone who's died. And the Philistine saying, this is exactly what's going to happen. And then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Says, you can have all the weapons and armor you want, Goliath. I'm coming with God, the one that you're mocking. This day, this God that I come to you in will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down. I'm going to cut your head off, and I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, and all the earth will know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. Okay. You have a young shepherd boy coming, and he looks at this 9'9" giant who he's now actually seeing in full perspective. He's coming with a stick and a couple stones in his pocket and a sling. And the Philistine says, I'm going to kill you. And David's like, I'll do you one better. You are going to lose because God fights for me. So you're going to lose. I'm going to cut your head off. I'm going to not just feed your body to the wild animals, but everyone behind you. So that you, everyone else who hears about this, and for this army behind me who won't fight, will know that God is in Israel. So, verse 48, after a couple rounds of trash talking, the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David. David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. The giant says, let's fight. And David just runs full blast at this guy. And David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, slung it, struck the Philistine in the forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. That was kind of an anticlimactic battle scene. Watched several clips of this David and Goliath fight, and in order to make it interesting, they have to put a whole bunch of stuff in there to make it last more than what the scripture says. But basically, Goliath's back there. He starts coming. David runs that direction, puts a stone, goes like this, and it's over. One stone into a sling hits Goliath in the forehead, which, you know, 9'9", you're aiming like up at the ceiling. He hits Goliath in the head, and he has a helmet. We're not sure if he hit it so hard that the helmet got dented in, or if he managed to hit this really small area that the helmet didn't cover. But either way, the stone not just hits Goliath, but goes in. And there's been a couple tests, people testing, can you do this with a sling the way that David did? And the answer is yes. It's a very tough shot, they said. Like, it took me like 2 days to hit the target, but yes, you can hit with enough force to kill someone by hitting them in the forehead. Goliath drops to the ground. David goes up, takes Goliath's huge sword, picks it up, cuts his head off. And then Israel's army goes to war. They chase the Philistines for miles, killing people everywhere. Now that Goliath is dead. So, what is there to learn from this story about David and Goliath? I think there are some very good things that we've heard before about having faith, right? David had faith that God would take care of him because God had taken care of him in the past. God had protected David in the field watching sheep. And so he had learned a lesson outside of the spotlight before anyone in Israel really cared about David, that God will protect him. And so David's faith that day didn't waver. He wasn't like everyone else in the army saying, I don't know if God can take care of giants, because David had seen God take care of lions and bears. And he says, this guy is not any different. He also trusted that God would fulfill his promise of him being king. So if God wanted him to be king and he went to go fight the Philistine, he couldn't die. Okay? So there's lots of lessons on faith in this story. There's a lot of lessons about being courageous and being brave and being willing to do impossible things. People might say you're crazy, but if that's what God is intending for you to do, then do it with everything that you have. And I think that is a lesson to be learned as well. But as we've been seeing through this study about how David is really kind of a foreshadowing of Jesus, we can see a different lesson to be learned in the story of David and Goliath than possibly we've ever considered before. To reference Matt Chandler, a well-known pastor of the Village Church, he says, the Bible's not about you. And specifically about this story, he says, you're not David. That can help us consider this story differently. Instead of us being David, consider that you're the scared Israelite up on a hill saying, this thing's gonna kill us. David is Jesus, a picture of Jesus. Not to discredit that this story was actually what happened, but David's life is a pattern for which we will see the Messiah live his life. And so instead of you being like, okay, I'm going to be David, what's in my way? Consider David being Jesus. And this enemy, this giant that Jesus was fighting, wasn't hardship, wasn't debt, wasn't someone he didn't like at work. It was sin and death and Satan. Jesus came to this world knowing full well what he was coming to do. knowing that he would die on a cross and that he would later rise from the dead to conquer this giant that has been the problem for mankind since the fall. That sin, like Goliath, mocks God. It says, where's your God? You think God really cares if you do this? You think God is going to notice if you steal or lie? You think that you should live your life for a God you cannot see? See, sin and Satan and death mock God. Say, God doesn't exist, and if he does exist, he's a terrible person, because look at what happened. This hurricane, this tornado, this earthquake, this disaster, what's he doing about it? But Jesus came to defeat, to crush the snake, the serpent, and to defeat sin and death for us, on our behalf. Because we, just like Eliab, were too afraid and unable to fight for ourselves. And so Jesus, an unexpected son of a carpenter, born into this family where everyone's questioning who his father is, shows up on the scene, lives a perfectly good life, and says, I will die for you because you guys can't do it. So let me go defeat your greatest enemy. Jesus, through his suffering and crucifixion, killed sin and death and their ability to hold you in prison anymore. So going back to the story, right? Stone hits Goliath, Goliath falls down. Dead. It's over. Yet David goes and chops his head off, so that he can take it back to Israel and say, look what God did. And to say, this is over. No more. At this point in our existence, Jesus has already killed sin and death. They have no power. They can't control us anymore. Yes, we will die, but who cares? Because we will be raised to newness of life, to live with God forever. Yes, we still struggle against sin, who mocks God and who enjoys mocking God in the lives of his children and accusing them every day before God, saying, that guy's not your son, that woman is not your daughter, because look, they're living for me. But God doesn't want us to live a defeated life in that area where we say, sin and death, you have power over me. Because Jesus came, died, and came back to life, showing sin and death have no business telling you what to do anymore. And so if we want to insert ourselves into this story, now we're the Israelites running after the Philistines, going to war with sin that has no power anymore. We can be like David, who chops off the head so that we can go to other people and say, look at what God defeated in my life. My arrogance, my pride, God has conquered. My addiction to whatever, my regular problems and habits and our thinking, God has killed it and has called me to conquer it and put an end to it so that you can show people what God does. And that's what David's whole point in this whole battle was, don't watch what I do. Watch what God's going to do. Now, to get this story straight, David didn't do anything except put a rock in a sling and throw it. God did the rest. God made sure David got to the battlefield to hear Goliath mocking. God made sure that the stone went in the right direction with enough force to kill the giant. David put a rock in a pouch and threw it. God took care of the rest. And so the call for us, when we consider, yes, David's bravery and his faith, we need to also consider Christ's already completed work in killing the giant for us. We don't have to go fight sin and death as though it actually can kill us. We can approach the dead body and say, let's finish it off and go show the world what Jesus has done. Jesus has conquered your sin, set you free from the power of sin in your life, set you free from the fear of death. So as his brothers and sisters, as God's children, let's go to war with sin that remains in our life, because we're not perfect. We're not Jesus who lived perfect lives. But we don't have to be afraid of any power from sin or death anymore. We can go and approach every sin, no matter how strong it may appear, no matter how well guarded it might be. We can approach it knowing God's delivered us from lions and bears before. This is no different. So we need to put on God's armor and fight sin. Well-known quote is that Christians need to be killing sin in their own lives. Not, Joe over here, I'm gonna kill your sin, but I'm gonna focus on my sin and help Joe fight his sin, but I'm not gonna focus on his. Christians need to be killing sin, or sin will be killing them. If we do not go to war with the sin that pops up in our lives, in our marriages, in our families, in our workplaces, if we don't go to war with sin, sin will start trying to kill us. And we will begin to believe the lie that sin and death actually have power over us. They don't. For believers, we are set free. They cannot do anything to us anymore, but we can do something to them. We are more than conquerors through Jesus, who loved us, who died for us, who came back to life. We are more than conquerors through him. And nothing can separate us from God's love. Sin that we have, sin that will come, death, nothing. No angel, no demon, Satan himself cannot separate us from God's love anymore. So let us go fight. Let us go fight sin. That's our biggest enemy. And let's do it with bravery, with faith, because Jesus already won. The giant's laying there dead. So let's go and conquer sin and fight with everything that we've got. Dear Father, thank you for this story of David, who did an extraordinary thing by approaching a giant with a stick and some stones and a sling. We thank you for being a God who can see us, his children, those of us who are trying to have a heart like yours, and that you will protect us, that we cannot lose against anything that you have called us to defeat. That you protect us, that you empower us, and that it is actually you who wins, and that we can be witnesses of what you do. We thank you for sending your son, Jesus, to do the excruciating and what seemed to be impossible to us, for someone to live a life without sin and to sacrifice himself so that we can have victory over sin and death. We thank you for the example of David and of Jesus as to how it is that it is important for us to fight the things that mock you, that you would receive glory, that everyone around us could see that you are the one who gets the credit. We thank you that in the future you will come to put a complete end to all of this, all the curse, all the sin, all of the death, and even Satan himself, you will put an end to it. And that we will get to live without sin in your presence for all of eternity. We pray that you would help us conquer sin and use the conquered sin as a way to witness to others about your power. We pray this through your Spirit and by the blood of Jesus. Amen.